This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. He's happy to tell you that he's gone from ornamental horticulture to survival horticulture. Chris Skellinger used to run a landscape company in a nursery near his home in Empire on the Leelanau Peninsula. But these days, Chris drives each week to Highland Park, where he tends an urban farm that produces fresh food for people whose nearest food source might just be a gas station or convenience store. The effort is called Buckets of Rain. Chris is the co-founder and director of field operations. Chris Skellinger, very good to have you with us.
It's great to be here.
Well, the question is, how does a landscape and nursery farmer from up north come to be an urban farmer in Highland Park?
Now, this is an answer I've never given before, but I think we'll give credit to winter. Because when you're in the landscaping business in northern Michigan, you've got 5 months that you got to fill. And it was obvious over the years that we would like to take what we had learned in horticulture in those 5 months and apply it to people who need to grow food or die, one of the two.
To do good.
And so we started – the winter time off gave us a chance to go to Africa and work because we had met up with some other organizations that gave us a name, who gave us a name, who gave us a name. Mm-hmm. And finally somebody says, okay – come and see what you can do, because you don't go anywhere without being invited.
So they open the door.
Yep. And in Lesotho, of all places, a tiny little country, and we worked in with orphanages and hospitals using drip irrigation to grow vegetables during the dry season, which is about 7 to 8 months a year over there.
So this is something that you don't really need it in Michigan as far as drip irrigation, but it's something you've learned, and
right.
Then you wanted to apply that to the dry area.
Yeah, the evolution, in Africa, where we were working, there was no rain. In Detroit, where we're working, there's just plain no food.
Wow.
A lot of our clients, are older, and their health is compromised. And their ability to get around is very compromised. So we have to bring the food to them. They really can't go to it.
Well, how did you get from Lesotho to Detroit and Highland Park?
We would do these little fundraisers here and there, and we were giving a talk at a retired Methodist minister's home. And at the end, this very wise and very little old lady came up and she says, you need to meet so-and-so. And she mentioned the name of a clergy member in Detroit. She goes, you need to meet this person. And I said, okay. And so that took us first time, into Detroit. I hadn't been to Detroit in 40 years. So I go to this meeting that's set up. And when I turned off of Woodward onto Glendale, I was not prepared for what I saw.
What did you see?
Just desolation, destruction. This post-apocalyptic, I've been in some pretty sticky places in Africa and in Kenya and Central America. I wasn't ready for this because in Detroit, you have people who used to have something and now don't. In Africa, it's different. They never had anything. So it's a whole different mindset, a whole different set of the blues when you used to have something mm-hmm. and now you don't. And we really realized that we needed to be working here, not overseas. Yeah.
So then that led to what you're doing today. Describe the farm you're working on in
okay.
Highland Park.
Okay. One thing leads to another, and we end up with the same mindset as the Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries. They say we serve 1 million meals a year, and way too much of that stuff comes out of a can. I said, I think we can fix that.
Let's get some fresh food here.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So we were, we started with a little tiny plot that we kind of messed with for a couple of months because we got in late in the season. And I start lusting after this one particular parking lot across from a homeless veteran shelter. And I asked the rescue mission, I said, what do we have to do? Who owns this? And they looked into it and they go, wow, we do. So it was a parking lot the size of a football field.
Well, you can do a lot of good with that kind of property.
And it's like, okay, let's this is where we want to grow our food. You couldn't hardly recognize it as a parking lot from the road because it was overgrown with trees and vines and mm-hmm. trash. And we got in there and took about 300 yards of debris out of there. And by golly, there was a parking lot underneath. Yeah. So it took us a year and a half to fill it in with raised beds. And now that particular garden or farm, if you will, mm-hmm. grows about 50,000-60,000 servings of food.
What do you grow?
It's almost easier to say, what don't we grow? Mm. We don't grow corn and we don't grow melons, but you know, we do tomatoes and carrots and onions and all of the greens, everything that we can, and peppers, and we try to do things that are, you know, we try to do every food group. I mean, every type of vegetable group, mm-hmm. and we try to make it easy, you know, to harvest. So a lot of what we grow is based on how easy is this to just go in and harvest, because we have most of it's done by volunteers. A lot of people have never been in a garden before. And then when we get it to the kitchens, it's still got to be simple, you know. So. Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the next question then. It's food that's harvested. You're down here all the time now from your home from May to about October.
Mm-hmm.
How does the food get into the community?
We harvest probably beginning June 1st. We'll start harvesting 2 or 3 days a week. You know, lettuce will be done first, and so everybody, and for the first couple of weeks, all the kitchens know they're going to be inundated with salads.
Okay.
And so we deliver. You know, we box things up. The volunteers will go through, and we'll pick really whatever's ready, and then boom, that goes in the back of the pickup truck. The pickup truck goes to the back doors of the soup kitchens. Tap, 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 door opens, in goes the food. And on Wednesdays, we package vegetables up and give to the neighborhood. So we usually do 35 to 50 bags on Wednesday.
So folks in the neighborhood know that they're welcome to come Wednesday, and there will be fresh food waiting for them.
And they look forward to it.
What kind of reaction or relationships have you developed with the people in the neighborhood?
I love the relationships as they form. They form slowly, but they can be pretty profound. As we start to develop this mutual understanding and trust of each other, that we're from different worlds, but we're both, you know, we see a problem and we're going to work together to see if we can solve it. And the neighborhood, once they understand that we're not just passing through and that we're sincere with what they're doing, then they got your back. In 3 years, or at least our third summer, it's not 3 years, but we've only had minor things walk off in the middle of the night. And some of the things that walk off, we say, hey, anybody got any ideas? And almost all of it comes back. So really, I mean, there's no shrinkage, so to speak. I mean, I don't care if people are in there taking vegetables, you know, at all.
Leave the equipment alone so you can keep growing.
So we can keep going, yeah. But just don't take our shovels, you know.
And are you using the same technology that you used in Africa to irrigate this, or are you good?
No.
You don't need to worry about that. You just are using your skills as a horticulturist and a nurseryman.
Right. You know, in Africa, the idea is to make every drop of water go as far as it can. If there's enough water to support human life, there's enough water left over to grow vegetables.
The idea here is
to put the food out into the community where people can get it at it, and also to help these massive rescue missions, Cass Community and Detroit Rescue Mission. Maybe we can reduce their food budget, reduce their bill, and they can take that money and turn it into other things like free health care or job training or drug rehabilitation, or definitely, obviously, emergency shelter.
You know, Chris, there is a lot of conversation in this state about whether or not we feel unified as Michiganders. There's up north, there's West Michigan, there's Southeast Michigan, there's Detroit. You know what I'm talking about. There's that kind of sense of maybe being in our own silos.
Mm-hmm.
And here you are. Home is empire. That's a long drive for you to come to Highland Park. What insights do you have now about that we're all Michiganders?
I suppose the biggest insight has been that there are two Detroits, and one of them underwent, you know, one of the greatest non-war population loss in human history. And because it happened over such a long time, nobody paid any attention to it. If it had happened in a week, we'd have gone in and we'd have fixed it. There are 66,000 abandoned buildings, and it boggles the mind that a civilized society could permit such a thing to happen. But it happened so slowly, it was easy to ignore. And really now that second Detroit is really kind of forgotten. And so I feel that, you know, we need to pay more attention to it. And so we're going to dive right in and we'll see who follows.
Chris Gellinger, co-founder of Buckets of Rain, and again, you can find out more at bucketsofrain.org. Thank you so much for talking with us, Chris.
It's been a joy.